Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. With us today, we have Asia Beckett. Asia is the founder at Shotzi. Asia, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Christian. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So let's start with Shotzi. I would love to learn more about the company and what problems you guys are solving in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. So Shotzi is a companion app for people who are taking weekly GLP-1 medications, and actually now also the daily pill. It helps users keep track of their doses, understand patterns over time, and just generally feel more informed and supported through the whole experience from getting started through long-term maintenance.
Only because I'm not as familiar with it. So is it fair to say that this is all Ozempic, or is this more broadly known as a more generic medication?
Yeah, okay, that's a good point. So Shotzi is a companion app for people who are taking weekly GLP-1 medications, including Ozempic, Mounjaro, Zepbound, really the whole category now, including the Wegovy pill, and lots of different formats for these new weight management medications.
Okay. So, and what was the inspiration?
Well, I am a person with obesity. I've always struggled with my weight. When I founded Shotzi, I had a diagnosis of obesity class 1. And I'm also an iOS engineer. I'm very technical. So I've spent most of my career building, digital products and really trying to solve needs for users. And I was very much a person who needed a tool for keeping track of this GLP-1 that I was taking. And so I originally built it for myself.
Ah, all right. Well, as many successful founders have found out, necessity is the mother of invention. So how long into the Shotzi journey are you right now?
Well, it's been almost 2 years, actually. It's hard to believe because it's gone by very quickly. But we launched in just at the end of May 2024. At the time, it was a nights and weekends side project from my day job. I was an iOS engineer at the New York Times working on one of their apps. And I really did just start working on it for myself, solve my own problem. But when I shared it on Reddit, it really started to take off very quickly. So,
oh, interesting. And I'm out of curiosity, was the decision to publish it on or talk about it on Reddit just because that's a platform you find yourself using, or was there anything in particular about hitting that user base that made you go there?
That's a good question. I wouldn't say that I don't consider myself to be a Reddit user, but there was so little support available at the time after the prescription. And I think that's still often true. This is a very new way of managing your health. It's very different from kind of a traditional diet and really different from, I think, every other experience I've had with a prescription medication. And so I realized that there were a lot of things that I needed to learn. I needed to understand how this medication was affecting my brain, my body, and because I'd gotten it through a telehealth provider, like I think many people do, I didn't really have ongoing support and advice. I didn't really have access to resources. It was all so new. And so I think, like a lot of people, I ended up gravitating towards Reddit because there was a large active community of fellow GLP-1 users who were sharing experiences, sharing advice, and it ended up being a very helpful resource just for that sort of crowdsourced wisdom. Obviously not a substitute for actual medical advice, sure, but it was a very helpful resource sort of in between those appointments.
So how did what you learned inform your product roadmap? back in 2024, and how has that evolved to today?
Yeah. Well, all of my original beta testers were from that Reddit community. Many of them are still users of the app and still very wonderful active beta testers. And they were very direct in shaping the product roadmap and letting me know what needed to be added or improved. A lot of the original feature set was just, again, based on my own needs and things that I had seen, in people's sort of complicated spreadsheets that they were creating for themselves. There's a real desire for charts and for estimates of medication levels over time. It ends up being very helpful when you're taking one of these. But then I think a lot of the details were really hammered out in conversations with the beta testers, and that continues to be a lot of where our product decisions come from, is directly from user requests.
Fantastic. So maybe we can unpack maybe a little bit more along what makes GLP-1 unique. And I say that because I don't know to the extent that our audience is familiar with it. My experience, I'm having spent a portion of my career in health tech, specifically clinical and quality outcomes. I know there's an emphasis on medication management as it pertains to diabetics, and CMS ties payments to performance. What does that look like for this medication? How are you thinking ahead to, not only, supporting users, but, to the degree that you're thinking about continuity of care with providers, to the degree that you're thinking about that there's a, the medication is being appropriately used such you have a positive outcome.
Yeah, well, there's a lot to unpack there. I think first and foremost, our mission is to support the GLP-1 user, the consumer, and this is very much positioned as a consumer app, and it's a very straightforward business model around consumer subscriptions. So, we are currently, 100% focused on listening to our users and building out the feature set that is going to make them feel the most supported along their journey with these medications. When it comes to our position in the broader healthcare ecosystem, in health tech, we were very fortunate to bring on a chief science officer last year. It was a former chief scientist at the FDA for informatics, and has spent a lot of his career focused on health data privacy and issues around regulation with apps like this. And so he's been incredibly helpful in making sure that we are really putting our patients first, our users first, and also now we are working on finding ways that we can contribute more to understanding about how these medications are being used in the real world, because there's so little understanding, I think, especially from a patient perspective. And for me, that's incredibly important to be able to represent more of the patient voice in the conversations that are happening around these medications, because you see so much, there's a lot of misunderstandings and fear mongering, I think, because weight loss is such a loaded, space culturally, and there's so much bias and judgment that this is not treated like a normal medical condition, I think, in a lot of channels. And so for me, I think, not just wanting to make sure that we are, being as safe and responsible as possible with our users, but then also being able to act in more of an advocacy role for the patient experience here is something that I'm really excited about.
Fantastic. So when I think about one of the things that we looked at closely was behavior modification for purposes of closing clinical gaps of care. And I'll oversimplify it, but let's just say there's a trigger. How do you get somebody's attention? What do you ask them to do? Or how complex is it? And then three, what's their incentive? We can unpack those. I'd love to start with just, distribution and marketing. I presume this is on the Apple App Store, but what steps have you taken to get the word out to make sure that people know it exists?
Yeah, so we are on both the iOS App Store and on the Google Play Store, so iOS and Android. And I think we had the incredible advantage of being the first app in the space by a
Oh,
long shot. So,
congrats.
and also this is not my first app, and so I had some existing experience with App Store marketing and positioning. So we were able to leverage that pretty early on and make sure that we were, making the best use of our early lead. And so we continue to benefit from being the number one ranked GLP-1 companion app, and at the top of all of the rankings for the organic search terms. That is where the bulk of our new users come from. We've had over 1 million downloads, and we have at this point, I think, 100,000 active paid subscribers. Most of those have come either through the organic search results or through word of mouth, because it really has spread very much through just user referrals and recommendations, I think, from the beginning on Reddit. I think it continues to be often recommended on Reddit. People like to share screenshots of the charts that they can generate in Shotzi, and I think it's just a very helpful way to share the experience that they're having with these medications.
So is it okay? I mean, congratulations on your
Thank
success.
you.
That's fantastic. So can you give us a sense then how much time you personally or the team spent on design? Because when I think about adoption, I think about how easy is it to use the app, but then I would say most people have an expectation, and in general, iOS apps are great. Are great representation of what a quality user interface looks like. So how much is that factored into what you brought to the market?
With mobile consumer apps, design is incredibly important. And of course, it's not just the visual identity, or it's not just the graphics, but it's also the user experience design, and how does it work, and what do we surface, and where do we remove friction. And I think that I'm not I'm not a designer. I think anybody who's seen me put together a birthday invitation knows that I'm not gifted in the graphic design arts. But I do have, of course, an enormous amount of empathy for our user base, because again, I built this product for myself. And when it comes to deciding what features need to be in the product and how they should work, and the details around the form and function, I think I was lucky to have a lot of good instincts around what would make this the most helpful tool from the beginning. And I think I, you know, we were able to avoid maybe some common mistakes in the beginning. We've seen a lot of other entrants in the space focus on, I think we see a lot of teams that are maybe pivoting a diet app into this space. And so they're bringing a lot of legacy concepts that don't really make as much sense anymore for this, because this is not the same as one of the many, many diets that I have experienced in my lifetime, right? Like, this is a fundamentally different process, and emotionally, like physically, everything about this is different from, what I've done in the past, with Weight Watchers and calorie counting and keto and intermittent fasting and all the things, right? Like, I've done all the those systems. And so when we see other apps that seem to be bringing a lot of those concepts into GLP-1 tracking, I think that's just inherently not going to resonate as much with this community, because if you're actually a part of this community, that it really does need kind of a very different approach. So yeah, that's that's helped us, I think, make good product design decisions from the start, is having that empathy for the real user experience here, and then just staying laser focused on that and not trying to add in a lot of other maybe distractions that maybe would make sense for other types of businesses, but don't make sense for this.
Well, I also think it reinforces the heuristic that some of the most successful founders are intimately familiar with the underlying problem set. And it sounds like what we're hearing here. I am curious, and no obligation to reveal anything if it's inappropriate, but as my fractional CFO hat on, my head goes to, all right, subscription. What's your expansion? What's your churn? So so to dovetail on your last comment, what have been your thoughts around, okay, is there a way, for us to now expand the scope of value that we're providing and by measuring it with expansion sales?
So, I mean, in terms of our business model, we have a very straightforward freemium consumer subscription model. 95% of the features in the app are free, and they will continue to be completely free. It's important to me that we be able to provide useful tools to the community, which again is a community that has historically been marginalized and not particularly well supported by a lot of sort of aspects of society. We currently offer we have a few premium features that users can opt into, and that's just it's a very simple monthly or annual subscription fee. We have pretty high adoption rates on our paid plans, like I said, and we are aware that there are potential expansion opportunities as a as a player in this space. But I think right now it's more than enough for us to just stay focused on our existing business, which is quite healthy. So
And then how are you how do you think about churn? Is it something that at this point you've accepted will happen to a degree, or do you actively seek to unpack it and understand what's going on?
With any subscription app, churn is going to be a major factor in the long-term success. I think it's not just a question with the use of the tracking app itself, but it's also the adherence to the medication long term, right? And there's a lot of discussion around, how long are people going to be taking these medications? Is this a lifetime drug, right? Or is it a, lose 30 pounds before the wedding kind of, like, and I think experiences are of course going to vary. And we do see that, especially early on, I think the drop off rate was pretty high. Maybe even 50% of patients stopped taking their GLP-1 within the first year. But I also know anecdotally that comes up against a lot of issues with accessibility and affordability. I mean, we're talking about drugs that are often the cost of a car payment every month for patients out of pocket. Like, this is a significant expense. And so when you couple that with the lack of post-prescription support and the prevalence of side effects and maybe negative experiences when there's a lack of understanding, or just education and resources, then to me it makes sense that there might be a struggle to stay on these medications, even if they could potentially be beneficial to people who drop off of them. I think that we're seeing, I haven't checked the latest data, but I think we are seeing adherence rates start to improve as the affordability improves and the there are not as many shortages as there were last year. I mean, for a long period last year, I couldn't even get access, like I couldn't fill my prescription for 2 months because it just was not available anywhere. And I was driving around to different pharmacies, and last year was very challenging for these medications. So then how does that relate to churn in our subscription app? Obviously they're related. If the person stops, if one of our users stops taking the medication, they're not going to keep using our app. And I think there's a nice, there's a nice kind of supportive effect here, right? Where, the more our companion app helps them get value out of their medication, and the more it helps them succeed in their goals, the more likely it is that they're going to continue with the medication and continue with us as a customer. And so, there are many reasons that we want to be as useful as possible, but it is in our best interests, of course,
Sure.
as a business to make sure that we're offering the best possible support to our users.
I didn't realize there was a supply issue. It's interesting. Immediately when I heard you say that, though, my thoughts go to offering or, addressing access issues directly in the app. I don't know if from a regulation perspective, are there limitations on being able to facilitate prescriptions within the tool?
It's actually a really interesting question. The possibility of providing the medication itself within the app. We've actually seen several of the several other apps in our space just recently start to add kind of a marketplace for the drugs themselves within the app. And it's been very interesting to watch and to watch the user reaction to that. My instinct from the beginning has been that there is a lot of value in us maintaining an independent position in the space, right? Like that we're, Shotzi is not tied to a particular medication. It's not tied to a particular clinic or pharmacy. And it, really is, purely the relationship is purely with the user and the patient, right? And so when they switch medications or they switch pharmacies or they switch providers, which many people do as, pricing changes or their insurance changes, their data comes with them. It's a seamless experience, right? And so, we've seen people switching from the weekly injections to now taking the daily pill. And, in Shotzi, that's, you continue to use the same app, your historic data is still there, your charts are intact, your weight loss graph is the same. And you're, it's not like a, it's not a major disruption. Whereas, if the app that you're using to track your medication history and your side effect history and your weight history and all of these things, your notes, your journaling, if that's tied to your provider, then if you need to switch providers or if you choose to switch providers, there's a very likely chance that you're going to lose access to all of that data. And so I think for that's one of the reasons I think it benefits us and our users to probably, to stay out of it. But I think also there's a lot of questions about, the sourcing on these. We have the name brand drugs, the, Eli Lilly and Novo Nordisk, are selling, the FDA approved, medications in the United States. But then we have all of these compound pharmacies and these telehealth clinics that are selling compound medications at varying degrees of safety. And, some of them are reputable. There are many people who are taking perfectly safe, medications from compounding pharmacies that are still, USDA, somebody has gone and looked at the site and has confirmed that yes, it's being manufactured in a way that is clean and safe. But that's not always the case. And I think we see there's a wide range of sources. And I wonder about some of these, apps that are partnering with kind of unknown providers. I worry about, kind of what the sourcing is where the sourcing is coming from there, and what kind of product they're providing, because it's a very, there's a lot of gray area in that space.
I mean, it's totally aligned with your philosophy of great outcomes. I could totally imagine you have some unscrupulous characters who are whipping up batches, in the back of their van, figuratively speaking. And you're right, you want to make sure that whatever you're presenting it, if and when you ever present it, that it's FDA approved, or at least been through the rigors of a certified lab. So on the subject of outcomes, does the app ask users to record their experience with the medication that they're taking and to be able to say, hey, what's impact is this having on us?
Yeah, well, so the so we've had a lot of requests for being able to enter different kinds of health metrics and different kinds of data because people, yes, people do want to be able to correlate their their shot history or their dose history with whatever goal it is that they're working towards. So we know that we know that most people are taking these medications to manage some sort of metabolic condition, either diabetes or obesity or kind of in a tight range of conditions. But there appear to be potential positive effects for
Sure.
many other conditions. I mean, it's already been approved for sleep apnea, and I
Yeah.
think there's positive effects on all sorts of blood pressure, and and in the case of the medication that I'm taking, Zepbound or Mounjaro or tirzepatide, they're all the same. It seems to have a pretty dramatic effect on unwanted compulsive behaviors.
Sure.
So eating is one of them, but many other, I used to drink a lot of diet soda, like more diet soda than I really should. And I didn't really want to, but I couldn't really stop. And I found that as soon as I started taking this medication, I completely lost interest. Like it just, I didn't have to resist it. I didn't have to use willpower or motivation. I just stopped paying attention to it. It didn't mean anything to me anymore. And I think that is a somewhat common experience that people have with a lot of these kind of unwanted behaviors. They find that the desire just drops away and is much easier to replace with something, maybe healthier choices. So, suddenly I like plain water more than I ever have in my life. In addition to also suddenly preferring salads over, French fries and things that I imagine are sort of the normal experience for people who don't have the condition of obesity. Like I get to finally experience what that feels like to not be constantly pulled in the direction of these unhealthy choices by something that's probably an addiction in many ways. So when it comes to the metrics that people want to track and the goals that they're wanting to make progress towards, the Shotzi app is currently assuming that you're probably taking your GLP-1 for active weight loss or maintaining weight loss. And so most of the most of the tracking is kind of centered on that. But we have started to add more, and you can track your food macros and your calories and your exercise and your water and some of the obvious sort of diet related type metrics, and then you can correlate everything against your medication history on different charts and export. It's very data centered, but we are also wanting to move into more support for people who might be taking a GLP-1 for non-weight related outcomes. Maybe they are trying to reduce alcohol usage or cigarette usage. Like those are, I think, increasingly common reasons to be taking a GLP-1. And then they might be maybe it's not anything they're looking to stop, but maybe they're interested in longevity or preventing age-related conditions because it seems like there might be some beneficial effects there. And so we want the app to be flexible in supporting whatever goals and metrics a person might be interested in for whatever reason they're taking one of these incredible medications.
Wow. I want to be conscious of time. I got 2 more questions to ask. I'm curious if where does artificial intelligence fall on the roadmap?
Yeah, well, I mean, we are, I think because we're an app, I think we fit currently very neatly in kind of an existing category of health tracking apps. And so I think it's a fairly straightforward value proposition. We make it very low friction for people to keep track of the data that they're interested in. It integrates with other data that they might be getting from their connected devices or from other apps that they might be using. It all goes through the Apple Health or Google Health Connect. And then we help them visualize or share or generate reports about what's happening there and celebrate progress. So, I know that We've seen some apps that have experimented with integrating like AI chatbots and AI companions. I don't find that particularly compelling. I think if you want to talk to AI about it, you've got a lot of options for doing that. It doesn't have to be in the app. I think there's potentially some use of maybe on-device models for generating insights, looking for correlations. We haven't gotten into that yet. I don't know if we will. Again, it has to be done really with a high level of we don't want to do anything that might be construed as providing medical advice. Like, it's really important that people talk to their providers if they're having any issues or if they have any questions. Like, we don't really want to be using AI to insert anything that might be seen as medical advice into the app. There's really no need for that. So we've taken a fairly conservative approach, I think, in the product. But we're paying attention to it, and I think if there are ways that some of these new tools could be incorporated in ways that would benefit the users, then of course, and especially if the users start asking us for it, we definitely listen to them.
Sure. Yeah, it's interesting. One of the conversations that I know is taking place right now is running models in the cloud or locally. And it seems like literally as we speak, I think even maybe last week, we're starting to see Google deploy frameworks for local models. Especially if someone's downloading an app to their phone, and if for whatever the reason you don't have connectivity, it becomes top of mind. But totally makes sense. I mean, I don't, my sense is that for people who aren't, close to health tech, they don't appreciate that corporates have to avoid the practice of medicine. And so it's, there's no shortage of great ideas, but you also have to, manage liability and risk, not only for the patient, but for the company as well.
Absolutely.
Would love to know what the trajectory of your career looked like leading up to Shotzi, and how you found yourself here.
Well, I guess I had maybe a little bit of a non-traditional career. I actually studied film and got into computer animation for 5 years. I worked on TV and movies and commercials.
Very cool.
Yeah, but that was a lot of fun. Had a great time as an animator. But I've always been a very technical person, and I ended up kind of pivoting from animation into more technical. I think I ended up starting a website for animation students, and then that became kind of a career in media tech and building web apps. And then I realized that actually what I really want to do is entrepreneurship. And so I've been something of a serial entrepreneur for the last probably 7 or 8 years. First with a B2B SaaS product for news companies. That was a great product, but not a good business. And then a series of consumer apps, which, again, was kind of a hit and miss. It was many good learning experiences.
What were some of
But
the key lessons that you took away?
With the apps, well, with the first startup I founded, the big lesson there was that it doesn't matter how good the product is, if there's no money, then there's no mission.
Yeah, I hope everyone in the audience appreciates that, because it's that could not be a more true statement.
That was a painful lesson, because we really did have a great product, but I just couldn't keep payroll going after a couple of years. So the big takeaway there was that you have to be able to keep the lights on. And then with the series of consumer apps, what I ended up learning very slowly the hard way is that I have to be connected to the audience. Like, I can't just it doesn't matter how good my idea is or how clever my product is. If I'm not authentically a member of the community that I'm trying to serve, I'm never going to be able to, really reach people and really build an audience and a user base. And so that's what's really been, I think, such a big turning point for me with Shotzi, is that finally I was actually really part of the community. Like, this is very personal for me, and even if we hit a rough patch and things get hard, like, I still need this app. I still I use this app every day. And that, I think, you can really tell the difference I think especially with mobile apps, like you can tell when it's built by people who really authentically understand the experience.
Yeah, I mean, it just further reinforces what we talked about earlier, and that when you have intimate knowledge of the domain, I mean, that's been my experience too. I mean, obviously, there are lots of smart and effective people out there who can learn, but it's more challenging to compete when you don't have, that tie. Curious, have you ever ended up doing any outside financing for any of the companies? And if so, what was the experience like?
Yeah, actually, so with my first startup with the media tech B2B startup that was angel funded, so we were able to operate for a couple of years on angel funding, and then with Shotzi, I was fortunate to be able to raise from some really wonderful VCs early on in the process, and so we raised a pre-seed round. And then, we've also got a pretty significant amount of revenue coming in. So,
Fantastic.
yeah.
And what can you share about the Ashatsi's venture capital financing that was either good, positive, or neutral?
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, we're working with some really wonderful firms that have been, I think really that value add, they've been able to open doors for us and make connections. I mean, a lot of the people on the team that we've been able to hire, I think would have been hard to connect with just from my own personal network. So, yeah, it's been incredibly helpful being able to learn from them and think about this as a bigger opportunity than just kind of a consumer app, because I have a lot to learn.
We all do. Did you f look for them, or did they find you?
Yeah, it all just happened very quickly. I think we were I mean we were the first app in a pretty hot market, so it didn't take very long to get connected with the right teams.
Fantastic. Super exciting. Congrats again on the success. As I reflect on this conversation, it makes complete and total sense. You can tell that you're devoted to the subject. Be curious to know if you had a chance to do anything different. As I find that retrospectives are great, because no one knows everything, and in hindsight, we learn a lot. But would love to know if there's anything in particular, if you had a chance to go back, have a conversation with your younger self, that you'd share.
That's a great question. And I think it's always hard to look back on it because, of course, the things that were, painful and felt endless at the time, in retrospect, were a really important learning experience along the way. So I don't know that I would necessarily change anything. As painful as my long string of failed attempts was, it did mean that I was well positioned to take advantage of this opportunity when it came along, and I didn't make a lot of the mistakes that I made with earlier attempts. I think maybe if I had a chance, to go back, I wouldn't necessarily advise against the path that I was on, but I might tell my younger self to enjoy it a bit more and just maybe not waste so much energy sort of chasing after the wrong, or I think especially chasing after permission to do things. I think I could have probably given myself permission earlier on to just do the things that were the most important for me and for the types of businesses that I wanted to work on. So,
Do you think
but yeah.
these
Sorry.
expectations were self-imposed, or do you think that you just this was your, well, I guess in all instances they're self-imposed, but do you think that maybe you didn't allow yourself to have as much fun because you didn't think you were supposed to, or were you just doing other things that didn't result in having fun?
Wow. That's I haven't thought about it that way. Yeah, I think I just was I was very focused on making ends meet and paying rent and worried, I spent a lot of time worried about how I was gonna pay the next month's rent. And maybe I just had to, like, I don't know that I had an alternative. I did need to be worried about that. I would probably have I guess if I could do anything, I would try to resolve that earlier, because things got so much easier once I did take a day job and start bringing in some regular income instead of trying to constantly forced my fledgling businesses to try to support me financially. I think that's something that would have made it a lot easier to think clearly and creatively earlier on in the process and probably make better decisions if I hadn't been so, focused on needing each idea to be the thing that was going to support me.
Yeah, it's so themes of this have come up in conversations I've had over the years. But this idea of, I so there are two things here. One is just minimizing distractions. I think it's underrated. No one ever really teaches us to say no. I think to your point, it's something that we learn over time, in part out of necessity, because we realize that time is constrained. And then the second one is I don't know if it's letting go per se, but I heard someone frame it once as preferences. If you have preferences of how we'd like to see things work out, it's easier on our psyche, and then I ironically, it may actually increase the odds that we're successful because we eliminate the friction that otherwise takes place if we feel like we're forcing an outcome.
I think that's very, that feels like a really important perspective to maintain. That we do, I think, trying to hold on to that perspective and that acceptance and not be so focused on outcomes really does, I think, help us make better decisions and help us stay kind of grounded in the right the right frame of mind for decision making. So yeah, it's very wise.
Well, I think so the question I normally get is, well, how do you do that if you're not in the habit? And I think if there's one thing I figured out is just stay as busy as you can. And just because by consequence you don't have time to be stressed. But I guess the flip side of that is, to your point, it's like, how do you also make sure you're having fun? I think you absolutely have to. If you go nonstop, you can, this is a marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah, exactly.
Asia, thank you so much for carving out some time. I know you're got a lot going on, but really appreciate you sharing your insights. Before we wrap up, they can find Shotzi on the App Store, both Apple and Google Play. But if there's anyone who would love to get a hold of you otherwise, because maybe they think they can contribute to the team or an investor out there, how can they find you?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm Asia at ShotziApp.com, AJA, and or just one of the hello at ShotziApp.com, I think will also work. But yeah, we love hearing from people and always up for interesting new opportunities. So please reach
Fantastic.
out. Awesome.
Asia, thank you so much. I appreciate your time. This was great.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Christian.
My pleasure. Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor, would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com/podcast-guest. If you've got something out of this interview, please share this episode on social media. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.